We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the program longtime friend of the show. He has so many hyphens now: sportscaster, writer, actor, and now novelist, Gary Tagway joins us. Hello there, Gary.
Yeah, the novelist part sounds so weird.
Well, it's pretty exciting stuff. What the book is called, The Arm and the Fall. Where is it? What's the status of it? Can people pre-order? What's going on with this thing?
Well, right now it is live on Amazon. And, Richard, you will be getting your copy next week. It is on Amazon. You can go. It's The Arm of the Fall. And it's a novel I wrote. And I was inspired by just the over-the-top coverage of the Tom Brady Deflategate story. I was in Arizona, and we were covering the Super Bowl, and then Brady had the press conference. They asked him about the deflated balls, and blah, 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 on and on and on. And it just took off from there. And I said, you know, when Wolf Blitzer, I think, was talking about it on CNN, or I saw all the news guys. I mean, this is a little inside baseball, but, you know, at the Super Bowl, it's all the sports people you see. You know, you see all the national sports people. You see people from other teams, the other team. And then all of a sudden, all the news guys showed up. You know, I was like, what the hell? You know, I mean, it was ridiculous. I was like, okay, there's a little bit of air that came out of a football. What would have happened if the guy died? What, you know, if the quarterback was murdered? And then, you know, I started to just write this novel, and just the way it went. It's a good time. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of shootouts. It's definitely, like my friend said, it is 50 Shades of Grey for guys.
I love that description.
Shootouts in pro football.
I love it. Now, you've written a lot of things. You've written a number of screenplays, teleplays before. Right. Was this always intended to be a novel?
Oh, God, no. I read the book on vacation. I read the book on writing by Stephen King. And we were in L.A. On vacation, and I read it. And I still don't know why I read it. But I've never had a lot of confidence in my writing. As screenwriting's different. Screenwriting is, you know, images, and you can use sentence fragments, and nobody takes minus five, you know. Is it easier? I mean, in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. But the idea of writing a book or a novel was always very intimidating to me. And I read Stephen's book on writing, and I went, oh, I get it. Okay, I can do this. Now, I think I can. People may read it and go, I don't know what you're thinking. And then one of my friends reminded me, he says, yeah, but Stephen in his book said he doesn't like prologues, and you have a prologue. I said, well, you know, you still have to, it's not going to be perfect, okay? But, you know, if you have a young person that, or anyone that doesn't, that lacks confidence in writing in today's day and age, a lot of people don't write because they don't have to, this book should be in schools on writing. It's excellent.
Well, and I think a lot of schools use it, and it's just such a great guide for writers, and it helps you understand the habits. And Stephen talks in it about how he schedules time. He writes every day, that it's a job, and you've got to do it. It's not something you can just, he can't at least do it when he catches the magic, that it means sitting down at the typewriter,
right,
or the word processor or the legal pad, whatever it is, and doing the work.
Yeah, also, I think that, and what I took from the book was, you don't have to be a genius to do it. Quite frankly, I never thought I was smart enough to write a novel. And you don't have to be Steinbeck, you know, or Stephen King. You know, I mean, you have a story, use your voice, and if the line or the sentence or the paragraph is authentic to you, then you're good. But I was always very intimidated. Like, is my vocabulary there? Am I going to try to be, you know? One thing, Rich, you know, is when you read somebody's writing and you can tell they're trying to impress you with big words, right?
Right.
And you go, okay, this person used a thesaurus, right? I mean, this is not. So I was always intimidated by that. Do I have to do that? And after I read the book, it was just like, no, use your voice, you know, and let me, I think, you know, adverbs to a minimum and tell the story. It just made it very clear to me. And I that's great that it's in schools, because it is the Bible as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, you're a storyteller. You're an entertainer. You've done that through the years. Yes. And you're also an observer. And that's part of it, too, is sort of making those mental notes when you meet interesting people and saying, if someday, if I ever do that, I want to remember that thing I just witnessed.
Yeah, I mean, the thing when you start writing is the things that come out of your subconscious is like, wow, where did that come from? You know, where different, like people have said, like this book is, you know, the quarterback, the world's greatest quarterback is killed days before the Super Bowl. Who did it? The owner, the backup quarterback's girlfriend. You know, was it the religious guru? What's going on here? Was it the, and so, you know, you start to, what I said was, I'm not going to base any particular character on, like, the owner of the team is, like, not Robert Kraft, right? I mean, it's obvious. it's just not going to be, first of all, I get sued. Secondly, you know, where's the fun in that? You got to make up your own. But what I did find is I was creating all these characters, little things crept in from things that I had observed that I never even thought of. They just showed up.
Now, when I asked you about the book a few weeks ago, let's see, this was the summary you gave me. Sex, shootouts, a washed-up TV sportscaster, a smoking hot L.A. detective, and the Super Bowl. That sounds pretty entertaining.
Well, it is. I mean, it's definitely, you know, because when I talk to a lot of people and talk to my friends who are novelists and writers, they go, people don't read. Guys don't read. That's the big thing. Guys don't read. Guys read nonfiction. Well, you're a reader, Rich. You've always read. But, you know, and if you're Stephen King, you can still sell a lot of books writing fiction. If you're, you know, Michael Conley, you can still sell a lot of books writing fiction. But they said, no, you know, write something, you know, that you've covered. And I go, that's boring. I just want to make something up. And it's crazy. I mean, you know, a washed-up TV sportscaster, gee, I wonder who that could be. You know, with Rocky Suarez, the L.A. detective. You know, he's riding shotgun with her in her black Mac Camaro, trying to find out who did it, going on all kinds of adventures through Los Angeles. And it's a lot of fun to write. And it's a lot of fun to read. I mean, it's a fun, like when you read it, you're going to laugh your ass off. Look, it's not going to win a Pulitzer, I'll tell you that. But you are going to laugh, and I think you'll love the characters, and especially if you're in the media. You know, because, you know, one of the things, Rich, I think that we've always done is we've taken our job seriously, but we've never taken ourselves seriously.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, it really pokes fun at what we do a lot.
We're talking to Gary Tanguay. His new book is called The Arm and the Fall. How tough was it for you to find a publisher?
I did it myself.
Oh,
I couldn't find one. I did it on Amazon. Every time I went to a publisher, they said, no, you got to write nonfiction. Write nonfiction. They go, listen, you're a sportscaster. You know people. Can you write a book with Troy Brown? Can you write a book with Rodney Harrison? You know, can you write a book? I go, I don't want to do that. I go, I just don't want to do that. I have no interest in it. Like, everybody wants, you know, Wickersham. Can you do something with what Wickersham is doing? Okay. Well, let me see here. And he's a great writer. I mean, it's a great book, but let me see. Brady and Belichick hated each other and they split up. Okay. Film at 11. I mean, I just needed to do something different where, I mean, in this book, there is a pay-per-view funeral. Because I sit there and I go, and I was writing this and I said, okay, I mean, obviously the quarterback's murdered, right? So I'm not giving too much away. So there's a dead quarterback, page one, paragraph one, you know, the world's greatest quarterback is dead and the Super Bowl is like days away. All hell is breaking loose. So then, you know, you think you go along in the story, well, there'll be a funeral, right? Well, and I won't get into why there's a funeral so quick, but I went, okay, I could put the funeral in a football stadium. Boring. You know, the great Will McDonough, you know, his wake was at the Garden, which was, I mean, it was just amazing. With the people that are, I mean, Will was one of the great, a good friend of mine, and just, it was just so majestic. But I was like, I don't see that here. And I went, okay. So I got the religious guru that had this guy, you know, so I'm like, well, it's going to be a pay-per-view funeral. And I thought to myself, okay, pick any celebrity or athlete and say they passed, right? And I want to be respectful. I don't want to talk about people who have already passed, but I don't know. And you're telling me if X player, I don't know, LeBron James and his funeral, or I don't know, Brady, or any of these guys, or an actor, George Clooney, you're telling me people wouldn't pay to watch the funeral?
Right, of course. They would. That's the next step right there, absolutely.
That is the next step. They would. They would. I mean, like Michael Jackson's funeral. I mean, tell me you didn't want to see that.
Mm.
You know, or even Kobe. You know, Kobe's, you know, you saw the people speak at Kobe's funeral. Oh, my God, so tragic. So, you know, that's in there. So that's where I kind of deviate from the norm where, you know, that there's a pay-per-view, you know, 1999, you can watch the quarterback's funeral. That happens. So you can't do that in a nonfiction book because it hasn't happened. So I wanted to make it up. And that's why I was very frustrating, Rich. I had a hard time, and I know a lot of people. And they were like, oh, Tanguy, write a book about some, you know, somebody that's been on a team. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. Screw that. So I went to Amazon, and I went, I can do it myself.
Yeah.
So I hired the cover art. I hired the graphic artist.
Which is great, by the way. The cover is fantastic.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah, Rafael Anders from New Mexico. I found him on Reedsy.com. There are a lot of established writers now that self-publish on Amazon because you can make more per book.
Right.
You know, I mean, the guys like Stephen King and you know, obviously the established writers, they make a lot of money. They have huge advances. They have movie deals attached. But, I mean, so I said, all right, well, you guys don't think this story's worth something. I do. I'm doing it myself. And I did it myself. And I hired an editor, which was an interesting experience. That was because I'm a terrible editor, and it turned out he wasn't that great either. But I rectified that. But I did the whole thing myself. And now I'm marketing myself. And, you know, so far, so good. I mean, you know, I like it.
I'm very proud of it. I can't wait to read it. The book is called The Arm and the Fall, available right now on Amazon. Am I wrong to think that somewhere there's a former teacher at Rumford High School saying, Gary Tanguay wrote a novel, shouldn't he read one first?
Well, I'll tell you, in the dedication that you will read, I thank Joanne Kerr, because my sophomore year in high school, I always had these crazy ideas, and that's why screenwriting appealed to me. I had trouble organizing my thoughts in high school. And she sat me down in my class because it was creative writing and I would write, but I was all over the road. You know, I had no organization. It was just, she was like, if you can kind of corral these, you kind of got something. And she sat me down and she taught me structure. And I don't know where Joanne Kerr is, but I thank her in the book. But I don't know how she's going to feel on page one when our hero, the washed up sportscaster, wakes up 1 o'clock in the afternoon with a hooker in bed. So, I mean,
look, it's poetic license. Again, it's fiction. It's not real.
It's fiction. Yeah. Well, you know, Jerry the Cush Cushing, page one, you know, the quarterback, the arm dies. Danny Dion Wilcox, we find out in the first paragraph of the book, you open up, he's dead. Second paragraph, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Jerry, the Washington sportscaster, is in bed with a prostitute, gets a phone call, and says, the greatest quarterback in the world is dead. And we're off and running, Rich.
I love it.
We're off and running.
I can't wait. Now, is there a grizzled old a local radio guy offering sage advice who appears anywhere in this story?
If we ever made it into a movie, we'll find a role for you, but unfortunately not.
All right, that'll be in the follow-up. I look forward to that. Now, for most people, coming out with a novel would be a pretty good fall, but not you, Gary Tanguay, you overachiever. In the midst of all that, new movie out today that you appear in that is already getting great reviews, the latest from Adam McKay, Don't Look Up. Every big name in Hollywood, including Gary Tanguay, in this film.
Well, just again, a little inside baseball. When you work on a movie, there's a call sheet, and everybody has a number. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio is number one. Jennifer Lawrence is number two. You know, Cate Blanchett, I think there were so many stars in this one. I think she was like number 11, which is insane. and they have the list of all the actors. So when you get the schedule, the call sheet, it just has your number, right? I don't know why they do that, and they just don't use people's names. I have no idea. It's probably a Hollywood thing, like somebody wants to be number one on the call sheet. I was number 115.
So that means you probably don't get a private trailer then.
You know, I got a little one.
Oh, nice.
And then I just did the Whitney Houston movie. I basically play Frank Gifford in the Whitney Houston movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we shot it in Foxborough like last month, where he introduces her at the National Anthem in Tampa. You know, they made Foxborough Tampa Stadium, which is movie making magic. And I had a big trailer then, Rich. I sent pictures home to my wife and kids. I was like, look, man, I got this is like a grown up trailer. But Knives Out, Richie, you are going to laugh your ass off. Oh my God, it is so funny. It is just so funny. It's hilarious. And yeah, I mean, I'm in it a couple of times. Hopefully we make the cut. So it was in the Globe the other day. The guy reviewed it in the Globe and he said I'm in it. So I'm taking the family to the movie Sunday afternoon. And they're like, Dad, do we have to go? And I go, yes, 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 you have to go.
Well, that's fantastic. And I can't wait to see that. Now, who plays Whitney Houston in this film?
You know something, Richie? This is embarrassing. I don't know. Oh, my God. Hang on. Right. Do you have IMDb right there? I forgot her name. She's a newcomer.
I'll find her.
This is such bad radio. It's such bad radio.
Well, you know what? I've been doing bad radio a long time.
It's somewhere George Hale is screaming at us.
as long as there's no dead air, we're okay.
But Whitney, I can't find it. Naomi
Ackie.
Yeah, I mean, she was been in some of the Avengers, and I didn't know her. But I hear she's phenomenal. I mean, Stanley Tucci's in it. Clive Owen is one of the producers. I mean, it's supposed to be. It's a big movie. I mean, it's a big
Directed by Casey Lemons. Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, I worked with her. She was great. Oh, my God. She was so nice. She was like, that's the cool. I mean, I'm not going to lie, man. You know, when you get cast, even if it's just being a stupid sportscaster, I'll tell you, like Adam McKay, sits there or Cassie like that, or, in Knives Out, and these guys come up to you and they say, yeah, we loved you. We cast you. I mean, I get a swell head. She was so nice. Oh, my God. She was great.
Well, that's fantastic. Great. Well, a lot of things going on there now. Have you had any time to watch any football? The Patriots, are you surprised by what's going on?
We shouldn't be surprised. I am, but we shouldn't be. It was like, shame on us, right? Bill Belichick, we should have known. Now, where Bill made the mistake is, and I think this has been Bill, I think the two greatest flaws that Bill has had as a coach is the loyalty to his family. And I believe the reason that he benched Malcolm Butler in that Super Bowl is because Malcolm allegedly had a fight with his son, who was the defensive coordinator, Steve. He was the D-backs coach at the time. And I think Bill sided with his son. Butler played only one play. They lost the Super Bowl. And I think that he also put Steve in charge of the defense too soon. And then after the Dallas game, I think Bill said, okay, all right, we can't do this anymore. He is taking control of the defense, and Bill Belichick has done what Bill Belichick does great. He's rallied the troops. That Buffalo game was, I was watching with my son. My son goes, this is so boring. I said, yeah, but it really is a thing of beauty.
Oh, yeah.
I know, three passes, but, I mean, you want to talk about coaching. That was awesome. I mean, Belichick just at his best, and he's just flipping the bird to all of us, Rich. He's like, screw you, because, we should have known. Bill's back.
I love it. I think it's
guy is back.
I think it's great. He's loving every minute of it. It's fun to watch. So listen, here's what I'm going to do, Gary. I'm going to get the book. I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to reach back out, and we'll have you back on if you'd like, if you're willing to do it, to talk a little more detail about The Arm in the Fall.
When have I ever turned down an interview? What do you mean if I'm willing to do it?
Well, wait, you're big now.
Yeah, I'm big. Yeah, slow your roll. I don't know. I mean, if Steven hears that, I'm totally indebted to his book on writing, and then if he actually reads my book, he'll go, wait a minute, did you listen to anything I said?
We did get a message on the Facebook page from a listener who said, please tell Gary that we miss him terribly on NBC Sports Boston.
Well, Trini's doing a great job, and tell the listener, thank you very much, but I'm enjoying, matter of fact, I'm going to my son's basketball game. And I love being at home, so it's worked out for everybody.
Excellent. Well, Gary, we wish you great luck with the book. We know the movie's going to be a big smash. If we don't reach out and get back to you before Christmas. Hope you and the family have a wonderful holiday, and we'll catch up with you soon. And once I've read this book, and I'll shoot you my reactions in a text, and then we'll talk more.
Yeah, Rich, you'll get it this week. Thanks, dude.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Gary.
Okay, bye-bye.
That is Gary Tagway with us, a brand new book available on Amazon called The Arm and the Fall.